Welcome to the Dyad Presents, a video game music podcast. I'm the Dyad, and this is Eschatos. Eschatos is a scrolling shooter developed and published by Qute, which is spelled Q-U-T-E. It was released in 2011 for the Xbox 360, and it's the spiritual successor to Qute's earlier effort, Judgment Silversword. Tying things together from our previous episode, Judgment Silversword was a 2004 release for the WonderSwan Color. The word eschatos comes from a Greek word roughly meaning the last in time or the end, as in the end of space or the end of the world. The story focuses on battling a mysterious alien force called Purple Erosion that has taken over the Earth's moon. This track is called Stellar Light, and it was composed by Yosuke Yasui. About the soundtrack, Yosuke said that he was aiming for an old-school game music sound. He says he was inspired by a number of shooting games, and he leaves it up to the listener to figure them out. And for a little bit more trivia, first prints of the game were also bundled with a bonus soundtrack CD, so that's A+ in my book. Also, despite being a Japan-only release, the discs were region-free, so you could play them on any 360 systems. And I want to stay on the WonderSwan for a minute, and in fact, I'm going to revisit that system for my next track. I'm doing so due to a fairly significant oversight on my part, but we'll get into that after the track itself. From the game, Moero! 2 exclamation points. Pro Yaku Rookies. By an unknown composer, for the Wonderswan, this is BGM 6. After I recorded part 2 of the Gunpei Yokoi episodes, I realized that I had neglected to talk about the sound hardware for the Wonderswan. And I'll just point out that Utopia Nemo was also on top of it. He's out there keeping me honest. Anyway, to remedy that, I thought I would drop in another Wonderswan track that didn't make the cut last week and springboard it into a brief tech rundown. For those who listen to this show, the similarities with the Game Boy should have been pretty apparent. Both the original and color versions of the Wonderswan use the same audio chip, which could handle 4 PCM audio channels, each of which can play 32 sample 4-bit sounds at selectable volume and pitch levels. And also, this is in stereo, which I guess is pretty common for handhelds. I guess people expected you to play with your headphones on. On top of that, I also read that there is a piezoelectric buzzer or beeper in the hardware. Or maybe piezo, I've only read the word. The word piezoelectricity means electricity resulting from pressure and heat. It's basically an electric charge that accumulates due to mechanical stress. Piezoelectric buzzers, or piezo buzzers, as they are sometimes called, were basically invented by Japanese manufacturers during the World War II era. Japanese companies and even universities formed a competitively cooperative association, using the catchy title of Barium Tight-Knit Application Research Committee they formed in 1951. The audio buzzers were used in a bunch of stuff throughout the 70s and 80s, like smoke alarms, TV remote controls, and something called a saw filter device, or a device employing surface acoustic wave effects. I'm gonna draw a line in the sand and skip that bad boy. Anyway, let's walk back from this little rabbit hole. I hope I've redeemed myself for that glaring oversight about the hardware. Next up is a double feature, including a recommendation track, in fact. Both are from mobile phone games, and I think they flow together pretty nicely. The tracks are from a new composer to the show, too. My friend Trey told me to check out a guy who goes by Maxo. Real name, Max Coburn. First, I'm going to play Trey's recommended track, than one that I found when I was checking out his other works. First song comes from the game Sky Chasers, and from the track World 3, Snow. Then, from the game Combo Critters, Veggie. Sky Chasers has been described as a reverse platformer and a cave flyer. You tap the left and right side of your phone to implement rocket boosters on your various vessels, but you can't kill any of the enemies you encounter. Instead, you'll need to use your dexterity to outmaneuver them and clear the levels. There are really a whole bunch of subgenres of game that appear on mobile that I'm really unfamiliar with. Who knew that Cave Flyers was its own category? The game was published by Lucky Cat and debuted in 2016. It actually won the prestigious Dutch Game Award, Best Casual Game 2016. From what I saw, it's pretty well reviewed, but it makes use of some monetization features that, frankly, by their very nature, cause heated arguments on the internet. Combo Critters is yet another seemingly well-reviewed effort by Lucky Cat Studios. Also seeing a 2016 release, this game is more of a Pokemon meets The Fly, maybe? As the name implies, you catch critters, then combine them. Ooh. The rest of the game follows a more familiar turn-based RPG format. That being said, some of the reviews I read were truly glowing. And I think, if I'm remembering correctly, it was pretty cheap, like maybe $1 to buy the game. But I'm not sure about what kind of microtransaction issues you're going to run into. And that sort of dovetails into a quick aside I'd like to make to talk about mobile gaming in general. I guess I would put it this way. I have no hardline stance against mobile games, and I play plenty of them myself, or at the very least, versions of games that I can play on mobile and desktop. For instance, there's a lot of collectible card games that I like to play. Faria is one of my favorite ones, if anyone's heard of that. It's a good game. There are also tons of uncovered rocks with a lot of really wonderful music underneath for Android and iOS games, too. But it's just exhausting to try and spend any amount of time looking up mobile games, especially trying to find like information or reviews. It's something to talk about on my show in particular. It's like a roughly 3-to-1 ratio of probably fake web pages devoted to hacking game currency to reviews or otherwise legitimate web pages. I've been kicking around the idea of a mobile game focus episode for a while, but honestly, this is a large part of what's holding me back. And this is even with intentionally avoiding the whole microtransaction debate overall. X. Ha. Sting. And you can probably hear that thumping. It's almost as though someone is trying to hammer my wall down. Anyway, hey, the seal has been cracked. I'll try and get some more mobile game OSTs into my rotation. And thanks again to Trey for the cool recommendation. The guy, he'll probably make another appearance on the show. He doesn't have a ton of video game soundtracks, but he does do a lot of chiptune music. So I don't know, maybe I'll play something that's not actually appeared on a game or revisit some of his other titles. Next up is a song that isn't really all that new to me, but it did come into heavy rotation recently because of my daughter. We were hanging out one Saturday morning while my wife was sleeping in a little bit, and my daughter busted into very serious dancing to this track. And I don't so much mean that the dancing was very hardcore as much as I mean she was very, very serious about the dancing itself. Anyway, from the game Mado Monogatari 1, composed by Masanobu Tsukamoto for the Sega Genesis, and actually this is a Mega Drive exclusive, this track is for floors 1 through 10. Thank you. published by Compile. Mado Monogatari 1 is a remake of the first game in the company's earlier Mado Monogatari trilogy of RPGs. The games are first-person dungeon crawler RPGs that initially appeared in 1989 for the MSX2 and the NEC PC9801 systems. Mado Monogatari 1 was released for the Sega Mega Drive in 1996 exclusively in Japan. For that reason, it's sometimes referred to just as Mado Monogatari Genesis to differentiate it from the other similarly titled games. It's the only Mado Monogatari game to appear on the Mega Drive at all, and beyond that, it's the last officially released Mega Drive game in Japan. The last first-party game, Pepenga Pengo, was released a few months earlier. And if that title doesn't pop your peas, I don't know what will. Pepengo. The Mega Drive remake is the most different from all the other versions of the game. It has a completely different battle system and new characters and side quests. The overall story was pretty much untouched, though. Listeners may also recognize the characters from the series for their appearance in the puzzle game franchise Puyo Puyo. As for this game, the story has you playing as a sorceress named Arl, or maybe Arly? I don't know, I didn't look at the Japanese. She's a student at a magic school, and she must take her most important exam, going to the Tower of Satan and defeating all enemies with her magic power. I included this because it's yet another entry on my list of bad guys with terrible PR. For those of you who would like to dance like my daughter, I'll give you some very brief instructions. First, put on a very, very serious face, and then sort of do like slow squats with one hand in the air. Throw in a couple spins and you're good. Next is something that was inspired by Michael over at the Forever Sound Version podcast. At the time of recording, his most recent episode featured tunes from the Roland MT32 sound module, a early de facto standard in computer music due to its presence in many PCs at the time. In any event, the show got me thinking about some of the PC tracks I remembered from my youth, and while I can't actually recall playing this game, I remember that it was somewhat ubiquitous, yet simultaneously taboo. I'm talking about Leisure Suit Larry. So here's another double set, this time with slow, smooth jams to soothe what ails you. From the game Leisure Suit Larry in the Land of the Lounge Lizards, the Roland MT32 version from PC, composed by Al Lowe, Adult Television, followed by The Disco. Thank you. I think the elevatory smooth jazz music that was more prominent in the late 80s and early 90s shaped my musical development. I think I still probably love it. I know I love that Roland flute action. And I could talk about the Roland itself, or I could talk about Leisure Suit Larry, but instead I think I'll talk about what this music reminds me of. 90s Weather Channel background music. I'll now regurgitate an old tweet that I wrote that is suddenly apropos. What happened to the Weather Channel? The music used to be smooth, sweet elevator jams. Now it's just D-plus grade dubstep. But let's take this from the beginning. The Weather Channel is an American basic cable network. It was founded on July 18, 1990 by veteran TV meteorologist John Coleman and Frank Batten, then president of the channel's original owner, Landmark Communications. The channel officially launched at 8 p.m. on May 2, 1982. I'm assuming that most listeners to this show are roughly the same age as I am, but for the sake of future generations of kids listening to this show from the Library of Congress, let me remind everyone that there was a time before the internet and smartphones. If you wanted to know what the weather was going to be like, all you had to do was flip on the Weather Channel. I can vividly remember my mom telling me to hang on for a couple minutes so we could catch the weather. I also remember our shared boredom watching the other programming used to fill the intervals. But probably the thing I remember most is the sweet, sweet music they played underneath the local weather. For the first 20 years of the network's existence, regional and local weather info was obtained from the National Weather Service, but since 2002, all forecasting has been done on-site in Atlanta. And most importantly, since its inception, the Weather Channel has broadcast segments providing local weather forecasts generated by its proprietary WeatherStar systems. Without getting too out there, they use computers installed at head ends of cable providers. As for head ends, they're facilities that basically send and receive TV signals for distribution. Typically unstaffed, they're usually situated in small fenced-in plots of land. You'd probably recognize them from the giant antenna and/or dish that's used for broadcasting. Until 1995, the local forecast segments aired at various times each hour, whenever they could be squeezed in. But in 1996, the channel adopted Local on the Eights as the title for the segments, and they began to run them every 10 minutes. For example, 1218 or 258. Me spouting out random times there, it was a fair chance that I would say something stupid like 378 o'clock, so glad we dodged that bullet. Anyway, as I mentioned earlier, despite the unpleasant modernization of their soundscapes, the local on the Eights was once home to inoffensive light jazz, and the broadcasts ate up a fairly significant 288 minutes each day, so that's a pretty decent chunk of music. According to Sherry Pace, Vice President of Licensing and Merchandising at the Weather Channel, people have been writing in for years to ask us where can they get those songs. So much so, in fact, that they began publishing monthly playlists on their website. But perhaps the biggest coup for OG weatherheads like myself came in 2007. The Weather Channel Presents The Best of Smooth Jazz is a 2007 compilation released by Midas Records. It peaked at number one on the Billboard's top contemporary jazz charts in the same year. It marked the first CD from the Weather Channel, and it was heralded as the network's entry into retail music. I did a fairly quick review of the tracks on the CD, and it appears that they have included a few from the earlier days of their jazzy offerings. I don't know if I'm gonna give the album a full listen or not, but I thought it was my civic duty to let everyone know about it. I mean, I can't be the only one out there who fondly remembers watching the Weather Channel's Local on the Eights and listening to the grooves. Going back to Michael, apologies to all the non-American folks out there, and really probably most of the Americans too. If you sat through this 5-minute lecture on the history of the Weather Channel on this legacy video game music podcast, you have certainly found yourself in an interesting niche. There was a second thing I was going to reference that the Leisure Suit Larry music made me think of, but I ended up cutting it out. I want to make sure I carve out another big segment to devote to it, and I'm not going to combine it with that last little diatribe. Instead, we find ourselves at the end of the show this week. After smoothing ourselves out, I'm going to pep it up and end on a happy note. If you need a review, please rewind and listen to the dance instructions from before. You might need them. But before I go, as always, special thanks to Alan Euler, aka Periodical, for mixing and editing the show. You can follow the show at thedyadpresents.blogspot.com, where I also post the track list for the show. You can subscribe via any podcatcher, probably. Most any podcatcher, also probably. Or if you want to play it safe, just go with iTunes. I know that one works. Or Pocket Casts, that's what I use. Don't forget to rate the show on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at thedyad, and you can email me at thedyadpresents@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook by page or by group, which I trust you can find by searching for The Dyad. From the game Namco Museum Volume 5 for the PlayStation, composed by, and this is one that I'm sort of unsure. I saw one place that he was composed by Hitosu Itaki, but it was, the information was so sparse that I'm worried that it's inaccurate. But other than that, that's the only place I could find it. So we'll go with that. Until next time, this is the Pac-Mania Game Room theme.